I'm waiting for some people to come on live on the Facebook Live. And we'll get going. Momentarily, we're getting there. All right. That's quite true, huh? I want to remind everybody the rules on Zoom. So if you have a question, just raise your hand, okay? And then I'll stop and I'll unmute you. Or you could even unmute yourself. But if you don't have a question, better to stay muted so everything stays quiet. Okay, ready to rock and roll? We're good? Started? Okay. So welcome back, everybody. Today, we are going to begin learning the 37th chapter of Tanya. And Tanya at 37 is, I think, probably the longest chapter of Tanya. And it's a very, very, very profound and very, very important chapter of Tanya that directly impacts the way we live our lives and how we look at life as it's being handed to us. The gift of life, that is. So I'm going to give you, if I have to give you a one-liner, or even like a word or two, what is the theme of Tanya at 37? I'm going to tell you that the theme is impact, or specifically mitzvah impact. And in order to appreciate what I just said, I want to remind you about what we learned in chapter 35, and then subsequently in chapter 36. So in Perek Lamed Hei, the Alter Rebbe spoke about the virtue and the value of mitzvahs performed in deed, in comparison with mitzvahs that are sometimes performed by virtue of words we use or of thoughts that we have. That is to say, there are mitzvahs of things we're supposed to say. There are verbalization mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that are directly linked to machshava, to the consciousness that we nurture and engender. In fact, there are certain mitzvahs, tamidius, constant mitzvahs, like emunah, like belief in Hashem, like knowing Hashem. And these are ongoing mitzvahs. A person is always fulfilling these mitzvahs. As long as your head is in the right place and your heart is in the right place, you're actually fulfilling these mitzvahs. But mitzvahs that are done in the flesh, mitzvahs that are done in action, we learned are much more profound and powerful, because mitzvahs done in action. You have a question?
Your sound is really bad. Is it just?
Oh yeah, I don't know. See, there's something. Sound is bad. Something wrong with Zoom, maybe.
It's mine also.
Yeah. You're not able to hear me?
It's broken up. And all your words are broken up.
You know what? Let me make a suggestion. You all have your iPhones. If you go on to,
when you're talking, we hear you well.
Yeah.
Yeah, now you're fine.
That's very strange.
It's just a reception in the area you're in.
I'm going to suggest that, I know there's people who are watching on Facebook Live. If you watch on Facebook Live, for sure it seems to be. I haven't gotten complaints about Facebook Live, so I could try to attach a separate mic in the future to the laptop as well. You hear me now? Now it's good?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me know if it's not good again. I'm not sure what I can do, but I'll try to make this work. But again, it's on Facebook Live as well. I think the virtue of coming on Zoom is you can raise your hand and you have a question. This way it's interactive, whereas those people watching on Facebook don't have that privilege. So, as I was saying, a mitzvah that's done in action, a mitzvah that I actually do, we said, is something that's more getting a little chat that it's probably from older devices, but I actually especially left my house. I'm in shul, so I should have no problem with the Wi-Fi. It should be working. It should be good. Mitzvahs that are done in an action of a mitzvah is the most perfect way. No good, huh? Ay vey. I don't know what to do.
Rabbi, I'm going to switch over to Facebook.
You know what? So if you guys want to switch over to Facebook, or if you can maybe do half and half, that way you can listen on Facebook, and then I can still see your faces. That's what we could try. But it's on. Okay? I'm sorry. I can only use technology. It seems that there are problems with the Zoom system. I just want you to know. It seems there are problems with the Zoom system.
It's interesting that when you are talking to us now, we hear you well. But when you start teaching, it doesn't sound well.
Uh-huh. So maybe I just have to keep my voice at an even keel. If my voice is on an even keel, you will hear now? Yes? No?
Now we hear you.
Now you hear me. Okay. So I'm going to try it that way. The virtue of mitzvahs that are actually done, mitzvahs that are performed in what we call action, these mitzvahs become the perfect receptacle for the presence. You can't hear. Felix, you can hear? Oh, this is so frustrating for everybody. Felix, you can hear? I'm trying to unmute you.
No.
You can't hear. All right. Let me try something. Let's see if this helps. Is that better? You guys hear me better now? Yes?
So far, yes.
So far, yes?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so maybe we'll do that. Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll try it this way. Maybe it's just the mic that doesn't work well. Okay, again. In Pedek Lamed Hey, in the 35th chapter of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about the virtue of mitzvahs that are performed in action. Because mitzvahs that are done in action are, he says, the perfect receptacle for the presence of Hashem. That is to say, no good? You can't hear, Felix? Rita? You can hear? Yes? When I am performing a mitzvah, and I'm doing this mitzvah with my heart or with my mind, with my own intentions, then there's a little bit of me that's mixed in as well. Either I have a passion for this, I'm engaged in it, I'm enjoying it. In the language of the Zohar, yesh misha ohev, there is an I who loves, there is an I who is filled with joy, there is an I who has a sense of awe and reverence. And because there's an I, so any kind of I gets in the way of the presence of God. I'm not totally subservient to God. There remains the I. But when there's an action of a mitzvah, the action of a mitzvah, there's no static. Nothing gets in the way. This is what we talked about at great length in chapter 35, and I refer you back to that Perek in order to better understand the idea that the Alter Rebbe develops about the virtue of actual performance of mitzvahs. Then, in the chapter 36 that we just concluded, we hear about this notion that the ultimate mission and purpose of all the things we're doing is to make our world a beautiful, godly garden. And that our world was destined from the very beginning to become the place that rather than conceals the presence of God, but instead reflect the presence of God. And that that is the purpose of all. As we mentioned in the end of last week's class, right now, the ideal of Dira B'Tachtonim, a dwelling place for God, is for us the focus. It's for us the destination. It's for us a goal. It's not an actual reality. So Dira B'Tachtonim per se. God's presence is not actually revealed in this world right now. We are working. No good, Rita? I can't hear you. You have to unmute yourself. The sound is no good?
Sorry. No.
All right, so I'm going to... What, you want to reboot this thing? Zoom is having problems today. It's on Facebook Live. If everybody just wants to go to Facebook Live, we can do it that way. Okay, I'm sorry. Chava, are you able to hear? You are able to hear?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Can I suggest maybe when you're talking to us, your body is still up? Could that be an issue? When you're talking, when you're...
But I have a mic. I have the mic on it. The mic's attached here now. I don't know. All right. I don't know what to say. I'm gonna replug this back into Facebook and. I know that there are issues with Zoom today. I know that we're having issues, so that's not a question. There definitely were issues. All right, so. I'm having trouble. This stupid technology is not working. People down here. All right, so during in the present era, everything that we are working on, meaning this goal of Dira B'Tachtonim, it's a goal, it's an ideal, it's something that we are working towards, not an actual reality. It is what will happen when Mashiach will come. And that we're told is that the whole tachlis, this is what the thrust of Perek Lamed Zayin was, that the whole tachlis, the whole ultimate purpose of creation was that the world should become a beautiful, godly garden. And that because that's the ultimate purpose of creation, presently going in that direction, it is our purpose. Our purpose is to be able to get there. And our hope and our dream and our desire is to be able to reach this. So when Mashiach comes, that is the purpose of creation. And because the coming of Mashiach, peaceful, saturated in the presence of God world, that we will experience when Mashiach comes, because that is the purpose, right now that is our purpose. So the Alter Rebbe is going to talk about in the 37th chapter of Tanya, that the most powerful way for us to get there, the most profound way for us to be able to affect this global transformation is through actual mitzvahs. More so than mitzvahs that are performed mentally, cerebrally, and emotionally. Actual mitzvahs are the most powerful thing that accelerates and brings us closer to the coming of Mashiach. And the question, of course, is why? Now there's a famous statement made by the Rambam, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon HaSfaradi, in the beginning of his book of Mishneh Torah and Hilchas Tshuva. The Rambam says, I would say very famously, Rambam says, Osa mitzvah achas, if a person does a single mitzvah, hare hechriya es atzmai, if a person were to do even a single mitzvah, then he or she has brought himself, has so to speak, weighed down the scales in favor, in his own or her own favor, and ultimately in favor of the whole world. Rambam says a single mitzvah can catalyze a process of absolute total transformation and directly lead to the coming of Mashiach. In other words, one mitzvah. One mitzvah can make all the difference. So the way we understand this on a pshat level, on a very simple, literal level, is if you imagine two equally balanced sides of a scale, an enormous scale. Maybe there's 1 million pounds on or liters on one side, and 1 million pounds or gallons of liters on the other side. A single gallon or even a single liter can weigh the scale down. And once the scale is weighed down, everything shifts. One mitzvah. We never know when the world might lie in perfect balance. There are lots of mitzvahs being done every single day. Unfortunately, there's also lots of the opposite being done every single day. So think about these scales that are constantly being loaded with merits and demerits. And as such, it might be a single mitzvah. Of course, one could think about this the other way around. It might be a single avera. Mitzvahs were perfectly balanced, and a single misdeed, chas v'shalom, brought the world in the opposite direction. So every action that we take necessarily can make a world of difference. It doesn't mean it will. There is going to be, at some point, hopefully very soon, one mitzvah. One mitzvah that will weigh the scale down. Let us imagine, if you will, that there is a cup that's in heaven. It flows over, and all of your reality, the universe, is bathed in its glow. It's going to be one mitzvah. One drop makes the cup go over. So if one drop makes the cup go over, no drop can be ignored. No mitzvah, no moment can be passed over. But if that's the way to understand this, there really should be no difference whatsoever what kind of mitzvah it is. If it's a mitzvah that involves physical, strenuous activity, if it's a mitzvah that involves taking something of materiality and elevating it, or not, there really should be no difference. But in fact, the Alter Rebbe will come in this chapter to explain to us about the mitzvah impact, and specifically, we will talk about the way mitzvahs modify materiality. In other words, the Alter Rebbe is going to reveal something about mitzvahs. Mitzvahs maisiyos, mitzvahs that are performed in the realm of action, that was never really articulated before this chapter of Tanya. What we're about to learn was never laid out in its present form. And that is to say, when we speak of the performance of a mitzvah, and we speak of the performance of the mitzvah as leading us into the era of Mashiach, we do not only think about a good deed, which accelerates the process, which brings us closer to a better time. But in fact, we are speaking about the impact of the mitzvah. Because each and every single mitzvah performed necessarily refines another tiny iota of the world's existence. And when every single drop of reality, when every iota of the strata of existence is going to be rarefied, is going to be refined, then at that point, we have brought about a Mashiach reality. We have brought about a Mashiach reality because every mitzvah is actually a direct step in creating that perfect world. In other words, the Mashiach world, or the redeemed or perfected reality, is not the result of our efforts. It's not the reward that comes due to the various things we've done. It is the sum total of what we did. What we're doing now when we perform a mitzvah is redemptive. It is a redemptive process. And each and every mitzvah is a part of that process. It's like a person, for example, who might have a rash, God forbid, and they want to get rid of this rash. Or they want to get rid of this fungus. So they're using a medicine. They're using some kind of cream. And it works very, very slowly. Works very slowly. The person says, I'm using this for months. I'm still not rid of it. What's going on? The answer is, it works on a molecular level. It's healing one cell at a time. And then it's like a constant fight. And then it's medicine comes in and it's battling this fungus, this foreign organism. And literally, cell by cell, hand-to-hand combat, cell by cell, it slowly begins to make a dent. And then a person will say, oh, the rash was so and so big, and now I see it's diminished. Of course. That's because you use the medication. That doesn't mean that it's a reward for using medication. The use of the medication necessarily removes the toxic and foreign entity within the epidermis. I'm just using that as an example. And people understand that it's going to take a long time. But you know that that's what the process is. Slowly but surely you're able to heal or change things. In other words, imagine we have a teacher who works hard with his or her class to try to elevate the level of the students. And the reward, the prize, is that you have a classroom of kids who have grown, a classroom of kids who have become transformed. So it's not to say if the teacher works hard, then he or she will be rewarded in the end because the children will be knowledgeable or will be positively uplifted. They'll be different people, and eventually they'll appreciate that. They'll know what the teacher did for them. What it really means is that each and every lesson being taught, each and every idea being communicated, is slowly building this new reality. So the new reality, which perhaps you don't see on an hourly or even daily, maybe not even weekly basis, because the watch pot never seems to boil, but slowly but surely there's incremental changes, very, very small incremental changes, until suddenly a new reality begins to emerge. Now, in our world, we're not waiting for some kind of miraculous change to suddenly strike and we see a difference. In our world, meaning like whether you're fighting an infection or whether you're a teacher who's trying to uplift students in those two metaphors, in either way, you're going to see changes. It's just don't expect to see those changes every day. Person's on a diet and they ate less food for breakfast or lunch and they go on the scale. So, let's see, where's my weight loss? I changed my diet for the last 3 days and I don't see any weight loss. You say, don't go on the scale every hour. Don't go on the scale every day. Maybe go on the scale every 3 days. Maybe weigh yourself once a week. Maybe weigh yourself once every 2 weeks, because it's a very slow process. There will be change and it's incremental, but it's a very, very slow change. And therefore, at a certain point, incrementally, you could actually someday you say, oh, now I see finally a change. But that's not a miraculous thing. When we're talking about the coming of Mashiach, there will be a miraculous paradigm shift. There will be that moment in which the whole world is suddenly changed in this, the greatest paradigm shift anybody could ever possibly imagine. However, you must know that it actually is incremental. Unfortunately for us, we cannot see the change at all. It's only at that moment when Mashiach comes that all of the things, all of the effort, all of the activity, all of the impact of mitzvahs that have been performed since the very beginning of time will suddenly illuminate. Suddenly we will see the result of what was slowly building. But we're not able to see that. And this, of course, my dear friends, is the mission that Hashem has given us. The mission is change the world. The mission is modify materiality so that materiality should reflect the presence of the Creator rather than conceal it. However, having said all of this, we must know and understand that even though every time we do a mitzvah, we do a positive thing that the Torah tells us to do, and every time we avoid or refrain from behaving inappropriately, that we are necessarily making that difference, we can't see it. But it doesn't mean it's not real. And when a person thinks about this, when you think about the notion that the mitzvahs you're performing will make a world of difference, in fact, are making a world of difference, even when you can't see it, it should uplift us and it should give us inspiration to attack the challenges with full gusto and to do the mitzvah to the best of our ability and to avoid the things that are toxic, that do the opposite of making our world a positive place. Because you realize that every single mitzvah you do has a direct impact. So with this, let us begin. This is a little preamble. Let us now begin Perek Lamed Zayin, the 37th chapter of Tanya. Vehine, behold, says the Alter Rebbe, Tachlis Hashleimus Hazeh shel yemei samashiach. This perfection that was spoken of, this vision that was articulated in the 36th chapter of Tanya, presenting the words of our sages in a clear and lucid fashion, illustrating a perfect world, which is called Yemot HaMashiach. Initially, a time in which we'll all know Hashem, but reality will continue to appear as it has up until now. And then that leads us into the period which is called Tchiyat HaMetim, the time of the resuscitation of the dead, the time that those who have passed on will rise from their repose and they will rejoin us. Shehu Gilui Eiren Seif Baruch Hu Ba'olam Hazeh Agashmi. That this represents the revelation of reality. It's not that God is going to come as a guest arriving, so to speak, from another reality. The God, the reality is here. We're not able to see it. It's always here. We weren't able to see it. Only in this world can we not see the presence of the Creator at all. Not even a glimmer. We see nothing. This is the world of absolute darkness. This is the world that conceals the presence of God absolutely. And precisely because of that, it's called Tachtoin Shein, Tachtoin Lamata Imenu. That's why this world is the lowest iteration of reality. It is the greatest lie of all. The greatest concealment, the greatest obfuscation, the greatest smokescreen ever is the creation of the world that you and I are living in. Because in this world, we see nothing of God and everything of the powers to be. And we question, is there a God even? As the Jewish people questioned when they were in the desert, Hayesh Hashem Bikir Beinu Im Oyin. Is God really amongst us? Maybe not. Maybe there is no God. And that niggling doubt seems to eat away at us from inside. There has to be a God. I'm sure there's a God. I can see the evidence. I can see the fingerprints. I can sense the presence. Is there really a God? Is that what it's really about? We have this constant inner struggle. But when Mashiach comes, all of a sudden, the smokescreen dissipates in a moment. And suddenly, the reality, as we perceived it prior, doesn't exist anymore. We see a different reality. We see a godly reality, like, as we learned in the previous chapter, the Jewish people experienced when they stood round the foot of Mount Sinai. This, says the Alter Rebbe, very, very novelly, this is toloi b'maaseinu v'avedaseinu kol zman meshach hagolos. This is actually the result of maaseinu, our actions, v'avedaseinu, and our toil and our effort, the entire duration of this exilic period that we find ourselves in. That is to say, that in the exilic period, that's when the challenges are greatest. And because the challenges are greatest during times of exile, displacement, and dispersion, when we are not able to function in the natural, organic, spiritual way that was intended for us, which is the idea of Beit HaMikdash and us being in a sense of contact or closeness with our Creator, but instead we're displaced and disabled and we can't function in that way and we cannot fulfill most of the mitzvot, just like you feel life is disrupted now. That's what Galus is. We're all exiled. We have been exiled from our shul. We have been exiled from our community life. We've been exiled from our everyday activities. Life is disrupted. We don't feel we're connecting the same way. We don't feel a sense of satisfaction with life. We feel a gaping emptiness in life. This is not the way human beings are supposed to function. We're not built to live in our gilded little cages, even if they're nice cages, and even if we have enough food, Baruch Hashem, and even if our roof doesn't leak, and even if we have all of our material needs met, we're still not meant to live this way. It gnaws at us, it eats at us. My dear friends, this is but a fraction of what the neshama, of what the Jewish soul feels when there's no Beit HaMikdash, and when we are not living in Eretz Yisrael, and when Yerushalayim is not the holy city that was always intended to be. That's the notion of disruption. This is a perfect metaphor for the idea of exile. And now comes the question, can you still do it? Can you still function? Will you overcome the natural difficulties and continue to live an elevated, spiritual, moral, and holy life? Will you? You always can The choice is ours. Will we do this? This is the question. And if we answer the call, and if we do it, then every single action we take necessarily makes a difference. In other words, the Alter Rebbe is pioneering an incredible concept here. And the concept that the coming of Mashiach and the future reality of the perfect world is not a gift or a prize or remuneration that we receive because of the efforts we made, but rather it is the result of the efforts that were made. It is toloi b'ma'aseinu v'avedaseinu. As the Rebbe's father explains, ma'aseinu v'avedaseinu correspond to Yemei Samashiach and to Tchiyas HaMeisim conversely. And he suggests that ma'aseinu is the actions that are taken, which come sometimes habitually or almost naturally, and avoda, the things we really need to toil at, the things that go against our natural grain, taking the path of greatest resistance, or the times in which we are challenged endlessly from the outside and the inside, and we overcome these challenges, and we do what Hashem wants. My dear friends, that necessarily is impacting the world and changing it, even if we can't see it. Ki hagoyrim schar hamitzvah. The Alter Rebbe now illuminatingly shares with us an amazing concept. The cause of the reward of the mitzvah. The end result that is brought about through the actions taken as per the instructions in the Torah. He ha-mitzvah be'atzma. The mitzvah itself is the greatest reward. The mitzvah itself is what's being achieved. A simple example. You have a sharecropper, and his job is to work somebody else's field. It's not his field. He owns no real estate. He's got biceps and a good strong back. He's got patience and perseverance. He can toil under the hot sun, and he can face the elements. He's a farmer, but he has no residuals to speak of. And he works. He's working. Works all day in the field. And he gets wages. He gets $10 an hour, $15 an hour, $20 an hour. He works hard. His work is being constantly looked after. People want to see, there's a foreman, somebody seeing, are they really working? Are they spending the time doing what has to be done? The results are being looked at, and as a result of everything you did, you get your paycheck. But then there's a sharecropper who actually receives a portion of whatever grows. So when he's doing the hard work, the results of that hard work, which will be the harvest that's yielded, will necessarily pay him greater dividends. If you're lazy, if you allow all kinds of vermin or animals to destroy the crops, it's less for you. If you work hard and you ensure that every inch of soil is properly tilled and that the fertilization is achieved to the maximum ability, obviously you need rain and you need Hashem's bracha, but there'll be a harvest and your hard work has a lot to do with that harvest. So then you have the results of that hard work. That's your reward. Says the Alter Rebbe, ki ba'asiyosa mamshich ha'odom gilui oir en seif baruchu. When you perform a mitzvah, when you do something which the Torah tells you to do, especially when it's difficult, when you do that, so then you are actualizing the presence of the Creator in what we refer to proverbially as milmaila lamata, as if to bring God from a loftier plane into our plane of actuality and materiality and tangibility, but of course it's a euphemism, it's a metaphor. God is not above or below. Lehislabesh, that it becomes embodied or enclosed, as it were, begashmias olam hazeh, in the material reality of this world. In other words, When you do a mitzvah, you are making the world a place that is less dense. You are making the materiality less opaque. You're making it more lucid. You're making it clear. You're crystallizing. You're cleaning it. You're refining it. When you do the mitzvah, that's what you're doing. The thing is that right now, godliness is not revealed. So we don't see this. Let me put it this way. We believe with perfect faith that God is bringing all of reality into existence each and every single moment. That means quantum physics and all of the subatomic structure that allows for our world to exist as we know it is something that's constantly being brought into existence by a higher force, namely godliness. And what do we see of that? What do you and I see of that? Do you and I see the hand of the Creator in creation? The simple answer is no. We could come to the conclusion that it is impossible to conceive of this world being an accident. We can come to the logical end that says there has to be something behind all that we see. It's too exquisite, it's too perfect to be left to chance. Nothing else in the world happens by itself. Things which are far less sophisticated and far less detailed can't happen by themselves. So the notion that the world is just an automatic pilot, just out of control and just randomly happening to put itself together, say it doesn't make sense. So we can come to the logical conclusion there has to be a creator. There has to be a force that is undergirding and binding everything as it exists now. But we don't see godliness. We don't see ruchnius. We don't see spiritual reality. We see material reality. The Rebbe once said, "Was is ruchnius, weiß keiner nicht." What is ruchnius? What is spiritual reality? Nobody knows what it means. The Rebbe said, "Keiner ist nicht gesehen." Nobody ever saw it. In our world, we don't see these things. In our world, we see materiality. In every iota of existence, there's a godly spark. We don't see it. So the Alter Rebbe says you should know that when you take a physical item, an object, and you perform a mitzvah with it, you are necessarily setting that divine spark free. And it means that it's suddenly able to fill this item. Instead of being dormant, it becomes dominant. Instead of being something which is only allowing a klipa, a husk, an external reality to exist, it actually fills all of reality, that physical material reality. But just like you didn't see the godliness prior, you don't see the godliness subsequent either. So we can't see the impact of a mitzvah. But it doesn't mean there isn't an impact. Just the way the fact that we can't see the presence of God in creation doesn't mean that God is not invested and involved in every iota of existence. So what will happen when Mashiach comes? When Mashiach comes, suddenly everything becomes clear. All of the things that were done, trillions and trillions and trillions of details will suddenly illuminate. We didn't see it till now. We were blind. When Mashiach comes, suddenly the lights go on. Imagine a world is being built before us, but we're in the dark. And we know that every button we press and everything we do, something is happening, but you can't see it. And suddenly, at the end of many, many, many years or decades, or in our case, millennia of toil, suddenly the lights go on. And everything becomes obvious now. Everything becomes clear now. And you can see the impact of every single mitzvah ever performed from the beginning of time, especially since the Galut began. That, my dear friends, is the truth of how the world will look when Mashiach comes. So if somebody says, what's the reward of a mitzvah? The answer is, the mitzvah. If you went over to a grandmother and you said you spent the last 2 hours with your baby granddaughter or baby grandson, when people were able to hug babies and kiss them without fear, like they can today, remember those good old days? The days we hope and pray for soon, everybody will be able to be in touch with each other. And say, so you spend time with your grandchild. What did you get out of it? Did you get paid for it? And the grandparent would look at you as if you're totally off the walls. What did I get out of it? I spent time with my grandchild. Now, when you come to the babysitter, you come to the nursery school teacher who's paid a wage to be with those children, they're being paid. They may have some satisfaction too. They may enjoy their jobs. The best job in the world is a job you enjoy. But at the end, you'll say, they're not doing it for free. They're not doing it if they're not getting paid. Imagine there'll be a grandmother or a grandfather who's watching their grandchild, and the son or daughter comes up and says, okay, Ma, I'm going to pay you $10 an hour for watching my kid. Which normal grandparent would say, actually, I was hoping for 12. I don't want to get paid for this. But where's your reward for spending time with the grandchild? Are you kidding? That is the reward. A person invests time and effort in making a marriage work. What's the reward? The answer is the marriage. That is the reward. You want to get paid for making your marriage work? Then you wouldn't be married. Then it would be some kind of strange business relationship. So the point that we're making here is that when our sages told us in Pirkei Avot, schar mitzvah, the reward of a mitzvah, is a mitzvah. It's like, God, you got to be kidding. You're knocking us out? And the reward? Oh, a mitzvah. No. Schar mitzvah. The reward of the mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. Unfortunately, till Mashiach comes, we can't see that. In other words, the impact of the mitzvah is the reward of the mitzvah. And here, the Alter Rebbe goes to explain what he means in the clearest of terms. Incidentally, there is a notion in the words of the Shalah, in Beis Aaron, the Shalah says like this, on the word schar mitzvah, he says that the reward of mitzvahs, he says, is tivi v'loy heskemi. The reward of a mitzvah is the natural result, not the negotiated wage. So wages negotiated by people or their unions are ways in which people seek to be remunerated appropriately. That's not the reward or recompense for a mitzvah. The reward of the mitzvah is the mitzvah. In other words, that the reward is created by the mitzvah itself. Like a person who would harvest a field, say, so what's the reward of your harvest, of cutting all the wheat or cutting the corn? And what's his answer going to be? The corn, the wheat. Yeah, but what did you get out of it? What do you mean what I get out of it? That's why I did it. But the Alter Rebbe is going to take the idea of the Shalah and the idea that's articulated in Kisvei Arizal and put it into a whole different place because what he is telling us now is that this is especially accomplished when I'm working with the physical. When a mitzvah is performed with the material reality, then the change, the impact of the mitzvah is the change. That is the reward. For when all of materiality will be refined and redirected, we will have a messianic reality. And the Alter Rebbe says the example would be bedavar shehoya tchila tachas memsheles klipas noiga. Something that was initially under the dominion of the klipa, of the husk, or the extraneous reality, which is alluded to with the terminology of noiga. Noiga is Aramaic for light. As in the book of Ezekiel, we see it says in the beginning, v'noiga loisoviv, he was bathed in light, a glow of light. This klipa, this husk, this shell, this extraneous peel and packaging is called one that has light in it, because if it is redirected and utilized appropriately, it doesn't have to be all dark. The light that's invested in it can be released and revealed. Whereas something which is not appropriate, something which you're not really allowed to do a mitzvah with, does not have light inside, and as such, you can't really elevate it. You can't reveal the light that's innate because this klipa is all dark. And the only way for the light to be extracted from it is by actually breaking and shattering it, because it is literally a peel and a shell. And the only way you get to the banana is by breaking the shell of the banana. The only way you can eat the nut is by breaking the shell of the nut. Then you get the nut. There's parts of the material world which are powered by three forms of klipa that are totally dark. And the only way for us to get to the godly spark is by shattering the shell. But then there is a shell, a packaging, which can actually be turned around. It can become like the fruit itself if it's utilized fully and appropriately. So when something is under the shell of light, klipas noiga, which has a mixture of good and bad, the Alter Rebbe says, Shehem, we refer here to kol hadvarim hatahorim umutarim, all things which are pure, all things which are permissible, shenasis bahem hamitzvah maisis, with which an actual mitzvah is performed. This is the point that's being made here. When you use something of material matter for the purpose of a mitzvah, you necessarily reveal its inherent light, you necessarily reveal its inherent godliness, and that is the reward. That's another tiny part of the material world that is now ready to reflect the light of the Creator. Not simple stuff. And here the Alter Rebbe is going to bring us three examples. And you'll see that the example is, as the Rebbe points out, represent the three worlds of Doimim, Tzoymeach, and Chai. All of reality is comprised of the mineral inanimate world, the vegetative world, which expresses life, but it must remain tethered to its source, so that it's not independent life. And then there is the teeming animal world, in which we see life that is unhinged, untethered. It is able to be independent, that has its own mobility. This is animal life. And there are three different general forms of creation, three dimensions of reality. And each one has more animation or more divinity in it. The inanimate is also animated. You just need to look under a microscope to see that. But the naked eye cannot see any kind of animation whatsoever. The vegetative is alive. And there is evidence that vegetables and trees have feelings and are keenly aware of the surrounding, but they cannot express it. And the life And the vitality is muted. But then there's the animal world. And speak to any dog or cat lover, and he'll tell you about feelings, and he'll tell you about consciousness that the animal has. And the animal is aware of his or her surroundings. And Torah Emes says that there is intelligence in animals. And we could see this, as the Rebbe pointed out many times, that it says that the fox is the cleverest of animals. Shu'al pikach shebechayis. He is the cleverest. So if he's the cleverest of the animals, all animals must be somewhat clever, because you cannot be cleverest unless there's a clever nature. Now, the animal consciousness is very different from human consciousness. There is no self-consciousness. Animals do not write poems, sonnets, or develop theses. Animals' intelligence is all self-focused. It is all about it. How do I get what I want? How do I avoid a situation of pain or discomfort? What's good for me, what's bad for me. So you can train animals to do all kinds of things, but you cannot introduce them to morals. You cannot introduce them to the notion of a higher consciousness or living for a higher purpose. The animal remains an animal. A famous story that the Rambam said you can't change the nature of an animal, and his detractors said you certainly could, and so they wanted to discredit the Rambam. They changed a cat. They trained this cat to come in with a tray of tea to be a waiter. And the cat came dressed up in the cutest looking clothes, and he was balancing a tray of tea and walking towards the caliph, the ruler, the vizier of Egypt. And it seemed that the Rambam was discredited, and his detractors had proven his science wrong. And suddenly the Rambam extracted from his pocket a tiny mouse, and he dropped the mouse on the floor. And in a moment the cat smelled the mouse, and the tea went flying, and the glass shattered, And the little cute outfit suddenly was cast aside, and the cat was pursuing the mouse. Because in the end, the animal is wired to do what's good for the animal. Now, people are different. People are expected to serve Hashem. Animals are not expected to serve Hashem. There are no good animals or bad animals. A wild animal is not a bad animal. The lion who attacks the antelope is not any crueler or more vicious than the antelope. He just doesn't eat. The antelope eats vegetation. It doesn't eat other animals. And the lion eats other animals. Each is simply following its nature. But people can be good or bad. And that's a choice that they have to make. So when we talk about elevating the world, you cannot elevate people. People have to elevate themselves. You can inspire people. You can guide people. You can try to convince people. You cannot change people. You can't change anybody. They have to want to change. You can only teach them to change. In the end, it is the people themselves that make that decision. And so when it comes to changing the material world, we speak not of other people, but we speak about the inanimate world, the vegetative world, and the animal world. And as this is as Lev Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, points out in his Agos and Tanya, the Alter Rebbe here begins by emphasizing the animal world. Where do we see a part of the animal world that can be totally changed from being klipas noiga, or clearly a necessary reality, because if Hashem created it, it must be necessary, but doesn't reflect the presence of the Creator, it would seem, in any way, shape, or form, until you use the hide of this animal and you create klaf ha-tfilin, you create parchment with which tfilin is being made, or a mezuzah. You write the words of the mezuzah, or you create the parchment of a Sefer Torah. As the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbat on page 28, that the only things that can be used to actually advance the cause and express the presence of the Creator are things which one is permitted to consume. In other words, klipas noiga. If you take a pig and you tan its hide and write tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, you wasted your time and you wasted the leather and you did not create an artifact of holiness. It's not a mezuzah, it's not a sefer Torah, and it cannot serve as a pair of tefillin. And the same is true with a donkey, and the same is true with a horse, and the same is true with any other non-kosher animal. The pigskin may make a great football, and the donkey may make a great saddle, and the alligator can make a great pair of shoes. That's great. That's fine. But it cannot become an article of actual holiness, what we call tashmishei kedusha. And so, when a person uses the material reality and creates a godly reality, something of a sacred nature, he has necessarily revealed the godly energy in that hide, the godly energy invested in that animal. And now the Alter Rebbe moves from the realm of the animal world into the realm of the vegetative. As Iblevik says, that's why we talk the next thing about an esrig. In esrig, of course, a citron is the fruit that we are commanded to hold, to take, to wave during the first day of Sukkot, and biblically only in the Beit HaMikdash all 7 days, but outside of the Beit HaMikdash, rabbinically all 7 days of the Yom Tov. But Olakachtam Lechem B'yim, Rishon Hashem instructs the Jewish people that on the first day of Sukkot, that a citron and a palm frond, that a myrtle and willow leaves have to be taken together, so that esrig, that esrig becomes a reflection, a vehicle, a convention through which God's presence is revealed in this world, and therefore the esrig becomes holy. You have utilized fully the godly potential that is invested in that particular fruit, and ultimately in the tree, with one proviso. The proviso that it was not the first 3 years of crops, because that's called orla, that's sealed off from us. And the first three crops that the etrog tree produces are not kosher, and we're not allowed to benefit from it. So it's orla, and orla can't be elevated. Umoi satzadoko she'enom gezel. And the money, which now we're talking about something inanimate, be it gold, silver, bronze, copper, or paper, money is meaningful, and money is something that amazing things can be done with. And you can reveal the godly element of that precious metal or even the printed paper with one proviso. The proviso is it's not stolen money, because if it's stolen money, it doesn't work. And anything like this. So as long as you're doing what Hashem said you should do, and you're doing it in the manner that you were instructed, you essentially have revealed the godly element that is dormant within. Now, when Mashiach comes, it will become clear how you achieved and accomplished this. The impact of the mitzvah will be visible. Now we can't see it. But the messianic reality is actually being created by you every time you're doing a mitzvah. Va'achshav shebekayim behem mitzvah Hashem uritzoinoi. Now that you are fulfilling the instructions of Hashem, you're fulfilling Hashem's will and desire. So then the godly element that is in them making it exist suddenly is elevated, meaning it is released. It is released from its incarceration. It is released from its shell which conceals and darkles it. It is now allowed, instead of powering something which feels and seems that it is independent of the Creator, now it is reabsorbed back into the energy that is godliness. This is the godly will, the godly desire that is embodied within it. Because no longer is there concealment. So when you look at the tefillin, you know you're looking at a holy item. When you're holding that esrog, you know that this is a vehicle through which you are fulfilling the will of the Creator. And when you give tzedakah and you see poor people fed and those and people who are being taken care of and you see Yiddishkeit being promulgated and developed, you know that the money that you gave is actually used to power things that are positive and holy. You know that the money that you gave is actually making a transformative impact in the world, because in the end, the money is a means. And now the means has been exhausted. And when the means has been exhausted, the money that was yours, and you exhausted that means by spending it appropriately and utilizing it for a holy purpose, then the godliness that was invested in it is released from its shackled incarceration, and its shackles are open, and it is reabsorbed back into divinity. And that reality is another brick on the third Beis HaMikdash, proverbially speaking. That reality is the messianic reality. But now we can't see it. So here, the Alter Rebbe has introduced an incredible concept. He opens up chapter 37 by telling us that the mitzvah impact is all about the modification of materiality. Every mitzvah necessarily impacts this world. Every single mitzvah we do, and every time we restrain ourselves from doing something inappropriate and wrong, we're revealing a holiness in this world, a godliness in this world. A godliness and a holiness that is a step towards the ultimate purpose of creation itself, which, as we learned, is making this world a dira leYisbarach, a dwelling place, making this world the world that no longer conceals the presence of the Creator, but rather reveals it. And when you did the mitzvah, you essentially have created that reality already. However, although you've created that reality, it's not yet visible. And only when all of this will be completed does it suddenly, like the magnetic field, suddenly snap into meaning, snaps into this, the reality snaps together, and all the little pieces are suddenly exactly everything they were always intended to be. We'll continue, Be'ezrat Hashem, more about this next week.